Game Cola faithful, and welcome to the Game Cola podcast. This is 198, your podcast appetite we will satiate. I am your host and podcast commander, Joseph Martin, joined by...
I'm Blue Rider, and I like that he kept Sate open, I think, for next time.
I am James Pelster, and I am absolutely stuffed.
I am Alex the Jedi Jodrasak, and I am still thinking about Tempt Not the Fates.
I gotta say, I went back and looked at the transcripts for all the eights before this one. Yeah. I have a pretty bad track record with the eights, you guys. I used great, not just great. Feeling great multiple times, like at least three times.
Oh, dear.
And there have only been, actually, 128 feeling great was the first number joke, I think. It's one of the 120s. This was a poll, a quiz on the Game Cola YouTube channel community posts back in the day. So I was like, well, I got to do a good one. But you said Sate? Sate is one that I'm... waiting for?
I don't know. Well, you used satiate, but sate is similar, and you could have.
I see what you're saying.
It sort of.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's a I don't know. It just isn't like the rhythm of satiate just feels a little bit better.
Fair enough. But when you're running out,
it's a good Scrabble word.
Yeah, there is I don't know if there's ever a limit. I guess that's the question, right? Which number are we going to run out of words to rhyme first? Eight, well, there's, especially because I've reused a bunch already. There's still plenty in the well of eight. Probably my gut tells me seven's going to be rough.
Yeah, I was thinking seven, but also
100 episodes.
Yeah.
We already had to deal with Evan Steven or whatever that was.
But what, I mean, like the five? Good news is we can invent words.
Yeah.
We can do that, but it'll be a little rough when that's what we're doing every 10 episodes.
You can
I really liked I forget which podcast it was, but it was a five. It was Are You Dead or Are You Alive? All right, let's start the debate.
Yeah, I was going to say you can rhyme five with scythe.
Yep. Ooh.
That's a callback.
There's a good callback. I have to remember to add the card for that one. it is time. Now, we got to stop meandering. We've got to really kick it into gear because James does not have a lot of time. So I'm here to call together the first annual, semi-annual, sometimes annual tradition of Awesome James Does Done Quick. I said does again. I said this before the podcast when I made this joke too. Awesome game. Awesome James Does Quick is now the title of the podcast. And this is a segment where James goes to a speed running event. And then after he does that he tells us about it. And I think that's the most elegant introduction to a bit that I've ever done. So I've really set you up for success here, James, but also given you a tough act to follow. The floor is yours.
All right. Well, thank you, Joe. Great bit. I appreciate it.
Thanks for the feedback.
Yeah. I figure, you know, prompt feedback is important. So, yes, in the first week, carrying through a little bit to the second week of January, I attended in person Awesome Games Done Quick 2026. Oh. It Awesome Games Done Quick, well, just Games Done Quick, since they have multiple events per year, is an event that it's basically a charity marathon event where a whole bunch of speedrunners come together to play games as fast as possible and to raise money for various charities. Typically, it is, I believe, the Prevent Cancer Foundation in the winter, and then during their summer event... they raise money for Doctors Without Borders. Those are the two primary charities, I believe. So I've watched these events online since they live stream them on Twitch, and they have done for over a decade at this point. I want to say the event started out around 2010-ish, early 2010s maybe. But yeah, so I went there for the first time in person, and it was really, really cool to see everything happening. And basically to actually get, you know, both a front row seat to actually watch these things happen live, but also to see everything that goes into making them, which is even more impressive, because you get the idea that this is a big production. You have to have a lot of people controlling things for the tech behind the scenes to do audio balancing and switching cameras, switching feeds on the live stream and doing all that. But seeing all of the orchestration that has to be done to run an event of this magnitude, and not only that, but an event that doesn't really have large breaks. Like, you know, certain events, even if you're attending like a multi-day event, a lot of them, you know, typically they run from, you know, maybe 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. or something like that, if it's a festival or a fair or something like that. This is a full marathon, so it just runs from start to finish. And so people just have to basically rotate in and out for a straight week. And that is impressive, to say the least. So
they speed run the convention.
Well, I don't know if you could really call it a speed run. Well, I mean, I guess in the sense that if they did it in a more traditional pace, that it would probably take twice as long. So yeah, I guess that is true.
But also there's a frame rule, because if they finish the speed run early, they still have to wait for the next speed run. So
yeah, and boy howdy, this event definitely missed the imaginary bus with its finale considerably, which I will get into a little bit later.
I have a question.
But
I have a question.
And they have to be frame perfect.
What is your they had to be frame perfect. Yeah, no, they missed the frame perfect input to end the event on time. What is your question, Joe?
My question is, is there something that you experienced that gives like a secret or a thing that someone wouldn't know if they had not attended this event in person? Like about how it works, or I don't even just something specific that happened with you.
It was really shocking to see the number of not only staff, but volunteers. So we all have badges on. So in order to actually get into the main event venue, you have to have your badge, you know, just to, because you have to pay admission, which is, you know, helps cover all of the operating costs and all that. But there's, you know, people who are volunteers or staff also have their own badges, which say as much. And so I was really impressed by the number of people volunteering. So they're not even presumably being paid, you know, thus volunteer versus staff. So that was really impressive. It was also interesting because the sort of main like ballroom where they're holding this huge event is like basically 2/3 of it is all just chairs for the audience to sit in. And then the front half that is closer to the chairs is the stage, and they have two separate halves to the stage. So they basically have two different gaming setups separated by a barrier. So while the event that's currently being streamed is going on, you know, there will be a period where the other side is not occupied. But before the other event starts, the people come in and then they actually start like playing the game, getting a feel for the, you know, the latency of the equipment, making sure everything's functioning correctly. So you can actually, while if you're there in person, you can actually see basically the next event getting set up. And then behind the stage is all of the tech. And so basically the back sixth of this entire room is just dedicated to staff and equipment and, you know, the commentator hosts, as well as two small little mini stages for various little side events that go on, such as they basically have like little event recaps where they have some of the more prominent speedrunners get interviewed. And as well as, you know, some other little fun trivia games that they do. So it's interesting to me to see how much space was taken up not only by the stage, but also all of the other stuff that goes into producing this huge event. So that was really cool. They also had some really cool stuff going on elsewhere in this hotel that they were using, which is they had an escape room, which I sadly did not get to attend because the day that it opened, I got very sick and was then sick for the next 2.5 days.
So you would say that you had zero escape?
Yes, I had zero. Oh, that's a good one.
I mean, that's the goal, right? That's why I'm here. That's what I'm here for.
Oh yeah, that's what we pay you the big bucks for.
Yeah, exactly.
So they had an escape room, they had an arcade and pinball machine set up. They also had sort of another event that they were sort of live streaming simultaneously, which had audience participation. I didn't really get to see a super clear, like I didn't really get a full idea of what that was like. I only saw like snippets of it as I was walking around the various different like side rooms in this place. Yeah, they also had big practice rooms with a bunch of different games set up, some of them hooked up to like modern flat panel displays, and some of them actually hooked up to old CRTs and professional video monitors, which is really cool. I always enjoy seeing that kind of thing. And honestly, there was whole bunch of people selling merchandise. I bought four different little, like, they're sort of like movie posters, but they're more meant to be like travel posters for for various places in video games. So I bought my sisters some. One of them was for Luigi's Mansion. The other one was for Mementos in Persona 5. And then I bought myself two really gorgeous posters of areas from Hollow Knight and Silksong. And oh my gosh, they're so pretty. The artwork is absolutely glorious. So anyway, so all of that is stuff that like you really wouldn't get to experience if you don't attend in person, to answer your question. There's a lot, more than I was expecting, actually, for attending the event in person.
Yeah, because to a certain extent, I bet you can see it both ways of like they've been doing this so long that they've got it down to a science. And then the other hand of it being such a motley exercise, so many different things going on, so many different moving parts and pieces that it's like both down to a science and a very improvisational mess.
Oh, absolutely. Like, there's definite moments where, like, you know, they did occasionally, like, I want to say that in the runs that I was watching, there were very few, if any, technical issues. I think the first run, which was Super Mario Sunshine, they had a brief moment near the beginning where, like, the video cut out for, like, 1 second, and then it was fine for the entire rest of the run. Like, those are the occasional kinds of glitches you run into. Yeah. No, the timer was still going. It's okay.
Yeah, but they dropped frame. Like they could have spliced in a new run in there.
Yeah. It's okay. I was watching there in person. Confirmed, no cheating.
Oh, but okay. We're just gonna assume that you didn't get every single person in the audience in on the conspiracy. Yeah, that's just what they want.
Are you saying you don't believe me, Joe?
I am saying that. Yes.
Wow.
I'm not a very trusting person.
I can't believe this.
How I feel.
Why do you believe anything I have to say?
You know how I feel, because you can't believe it. Neither can I.
I mean, I'm just waiting for them to relax the rules so that it doesn't have to be, you know, a 100% convention, right? That it's just any percent,
any percent.
And then they can just skip straight to the ending of the convention.
We found a credits warp, guys.
Yeah.
We just start the event with the credits.
Arbitrary code execution of the event.
Yeah.
I think that's just a lawsuit. I don't know what you would sue, but that would probably be the fastest. If I wanted to stop a thing from happening, that would be my strategy.
I think that the charities that they're attempting to support might have something to say about speedrunning the event, however.
I was going to say, I think, maybe a fire would also. There's different alternatives.
Well, you see, you see, you say that. However, the reason that the event went about an hour longer than intended is because someone pulled the fire alarm during the middle of the final act.
The runner was on world record pace, and it was their current record holder.
Yeah, not really. This run was already the run was already on pace to go over estimate by at least half an hour. Ooh. And then, you know, someone pulled the fire alarm, and so we had to go out, you know, a lot of us in t-shirts into the midnight Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania air, which I am told is much warmer than it has been on previous years. Normally it's about 10 to 20 degrees Fahrenheit. Today it was a balmy 36. So we had to stand out there for something like 25 to 30 minutes, all freezing.
You have a jacket that you brought with you, or did you have to check it?
Well, I had it in my hotel room, but I didn't need to wear the jacket indoors. So the event is indoors. So I couldn't just go and get it.
You were staying in the hotel. I knew that it was in a hotel, but I did not realize that you were, in fact, staying in the proverbial hotel that the event was taking place in. That
I did neglect to mention this information. But yes, which, by the way, is honestly what I like. That makes it so much easier. This attending this event would have been a lot more complicated if I had not done that. But the event actually does offer, they will assist with booking the hotel for attendees. Well, I say they will assist, but really basically they arrange a way to book with the hotel. You can basically, they offer a link for all of the attendees to reserve a room at the hotel that the event is being held at, if they so choose. So that's pretty cool. So they basically, this is the same hotel that they've done the event at for, I want to say, at least 5 or 6 years now. So they've definitely got some kind of prolonged arrangement going on. But yeah, that was really cool, except for, you know, standing out in the freezing air. So, so that'll be remembered. And I think apparently during the previous run, someone also pulled the fire alarm, if I'm not mistaken. But I was not there to see that.
Oh, no. Now it's going to be a bit.
Yeah. So I also found out, interesting fact, that you pull the fire alarm in a hotel, it does not immediately evacuate the entire hotel. It just evacuated the bottom two or three, it basically evacuated the lobby and the second floor for the most part. Like everyone who was actually up staying in the hotel did not have alarms going off. They were not aware that any of that was happening, which is both a little confusing, but also I guess it kind of makes sense in the sense of if it's a false alarm, you don't want to be evacuating the entirety of a hotel because that can potentially cause more problems.
There's probably rules about it that make it make sense, right? Beyond just the evacuation. Yeah. I mean, the hotel is probably set up in a particular way for some of this. Yeah, or there's different rules for
if there was smoke detected or something like that, it might be more. It might trigger.
I do know that in my building, the fire alarm went off in my room specifically for no reason, and it didn't go off for anybody else. And it was 3 a.m. and it was just a little me project, a little me adventure to have my fire alarm going off at 3 a.m. with all the windows already open and fans blowing air out of the apartment. So open your windows. So my windows were open when this happened. What? I've done the one thing you keep telling me to do. that's my fire alarm story. All that to say that it does seem possible for not every fire alarm in the building to go off at one time. Yeah. Games Done Quick is very interesting, as it has this charity angle, which is a very good angle, perhaps arguably one of the most important, if not the most important angles. But there's also this element of it being almost a public record of speedruns are all about moving forward in terms of advancements and techniques and getting the game faster, not just each person, but sort of as a community, making it so that everybody can play the video game faster. And
mm-hmm.
most of the time, there's two, because there's basically three types of speedrunning videos that I feel like the average not speedrunner watches, but someone who watches speedruns. One is whatever the most recent world record or the whatever world record pops up when you search it on YouTube, or if you go to the speedrun.com page and click on the first one. So, right, just whatever the top run is currently. Second, I think, is one of the most, whatever the most recent Games Done Quick stream is, if you want something that is a little bit more engaging. And then third is the history of this speedrun slash history of this particular technique videos. Those are the three main types of speedrunning content. There are others, but I think if you were to make a pie chart of watch time, I'm pretty sure you'd capture like 50 to 75% of the content there.
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting that's that like its place in this ecosystem, I suppose.
Yeah. And they also do, I think a lot of like, they try to do community building events, so, you know, for like marginalized groups, like they have smaller events. I keep forgetting which the name of the event is. It's either Back to Black or Black in a Flash. I can't remember which one it is. Maybe it's both, which is, you know, focusing around, you know, building community for empowering like Black speedrunners, as well as Femme Fatales or Frame Fatales is what it's called, which is for female and femme speedrunners as well. So they also do a lot of like community building kind of stuff as well, which I appreciate. Oh no.
Okay.
Our speedrun for Awesome James Done Quick has failed.
Two files. Yeah. I can work with that as well.
It's all right. It's a we're now going from an RTA to a segmented run. We'll pivot here. So which is a thing, by the way. That's an actual speedrunning thing. RTA is like, you know, you do the whole, well, I actually don't know if RTA specifically means you're doing the whole thing at once, but like basically a single segment versus a split segment run is what I mean.
My understanding, I don't know how I'm going to edit this. If I need to edit this in a weird way, we are continuing to talk about some stuff that came up while Blue was working on some audio issues. Okay. My understanding is that RTA versus speedrun, a little bit is a cultural, English speaking, and maybe others, but I'm only familiar with English speaking and Japanese speaking, sort of communities. But also, I think part of the distinction is meant to be that there are some games where the speed run is based on the in-game clock, and an RTA is meant to specifically refer to games where, to speed running where you don't care about the in-game clock. You are trying to beat the game as fast as possible in real time.
I think, I actually don't believe that's the case. I believe that RTA is meant to be the opposite of a tool-assisted speedrun, a TAS.
I mean, that is so another, because I often hear, I don't know them, if it's the opposite. It is another thing. Maybe that's how it was set up originally. I mean, to me, that's what
that's
the
just
word
how I
means.
Hear it phrased, because sometimes when they're referring to speedrunning tricks, they say, oh, you know, there's also this other trick, but that's not RTA viable. They mean, which means that it's, generally speaking, it's only done via tool assists.
But, okay.
So that's why I think that it means the thing that it does.
I mean, that is, that would work. I don't know if that's explicitly what it means. If RTA means everything that isn't tool assisted, because there's also, right, like you said, segmented, right? There are tricks that are viable for segments, but not viable for a full game.
That is also true.
Tricks.
That is also true, yeah.
And again, I think really RTA and speedrun are kind of used as synonyms. Like, I know that a TAS is also, you could call a TAS, a tool-assisted speedrun, you know, it's in the name, a speed run. But I don't know. There's like technical definitions and then the way that people use the language
colloquial
itself.
Colloquial definitions. Yeah.
And I think that just sort of depends on more cultural
there's
factors
probably
than technical
some...
definitions. I'm sure it's merging just as the various communities are not merging necessarily, but talking to each other more than they used to. The different group, like the tool assisted groups and the individual runners and the runners from different countries also used to be more separated. And now that they're talking to each other, the language is probably converging, not necessarily on things that make sense for what the literal definitions of the words mean, but for a consensus on what people are talking about when they use certain terms. I'm sure there's people who know more about this than certainly I do that are very upset mm-hmm. with some of the things that I said, sounding quite confident.
Yeah, and probably me too.
I apologize to those people for sounding confident about things that I don't know. It's
likewise.
It's, I'm not... This is a problem with me that no matter what I intend to communicate about how confident I am in a particular piece of information, I always sound like I could never be dissuaded from my belief in that moment. I have a problem speaking with unearned authority no matter the context.
I did just want to sort of finish off that topic, unless people have other questions for me about the event, saying that some of my favorite runs were probably – there was a great Super Mario Sunshine run that was any percent, I believe. There was a great run of the PAL version of Luigi's Mansion that was 100%. And apparently the European version of Luigi's Mansion, because it had around 5 months of extra development time, they added sort of like an alternate mansion / new game plus kind of mode where the rooms are a little bit rearranged in the mansion. And I think it's mirrored from left to right. And also, like, all the boos have different health values, and, like, you take, you might take extra damage. I can't remember all of the details, but it was interesting. It kind of changes the game up a little bit, and that was interesting to see. There was also a couple of indie games that I thought were really neat. There was a game, a 2D pixel art game, I believe it was called Pipistrello and the Cursed Yarn. Which looked really cute. There was another one that was sort of styled after Nintendo 64 platformer collectathon type games that I can't remember the name of it off the top of my head, but it was also looked really cute and really charming. Had really cool looking movement. And then there was a run of American Truck Simulator, which went like completely and utter chaos. Basically, the point of the event was that these two women who were up there running, basically, like, they didn't have trailers or anything like that, but they were basically playing sort of on the same map, and you know, they were in the same sort of world, and they were trying to race each other from point A to point B. But about a third of the way there, one of them just crashes into this, like, a barrier on, you know, on, like, the little metal side railing on a bridge, and their truck glitches and gets stuck into it.
Oh.
And normally in the game, if you get stuck or you break your vehicle, you can request a tow back to the nearest, like, service station. But their truck was so bugged out that the game thought they were still moving. And so it would not let them pause the game or request a tow. And so the other person had to turn around and come back to try and, like, crash into them and free them, which eventually they had no success with that. And then eventually they, in trying to sideswipe them, ended up jamming their own truck into the same guardrail, which got them stuck. But then
wow.
Because both of the trucks were in there, the rail, like, sort of, like, jolted, and then both of the trucks were free. And then everyone in the audience stood up and gave a standing ovation. So, like, it just, the whole event, like, that whole run went just completely and utterly off the rails, And it was already expected to be like a very chaotic, because like they're just racing in this game, so they're not obeying traffic laws. They're just flying around doing, going on the wrong side of the road, doing all sorts of crazy stuff, because they're just trying to drive from point A to point B as fast as possible. So it was already expected to be chaos, but this was not the kind of chaos that was anticipated. And nevertheless, they managed to make a absolutely hilarious run. That was definitely one of the most entertaining runs at the whole event. It's super good. Oh, there was a really good run of a ROM hack of Super Mario World that was backwards. And I don't mean just mirrored. You start in the world, you start at the end. You start in Bowser's world. And then you have to go all the way back to the beginning of the game. So you're playing the levels, except for Bowser's Castle, you're playing all the levels in reverse order. And then all of the levels are also horizontally mirrored. And certain levels are also modified so that, like, if it's a level where you, like, descend vertically, now you actually have to climb, and they've modified the level so that there's like vines and stuff that you can climb. So they've even made modifications to the level so that they can be played basically as backward as possible. And that's another phenomenal run. Oh my gosh. There were just so many really, really good runs. Like, it's amazing. You can look up the, they upload all of the stream archives to YouTube, so you can watch them there. It's just honestly spectacular, and I had so much fun, despite the fact that I was out of commission with a fever for 2.5 days.
I'm glad you were able to still enjoy it.
They apparently call it the GD flu.
No, I remember when I went to Japan, both of the times that I went to Japan, basically the first like several days were me being sick, and it's like, why does this happen? It seems to be a thing that, like, if you're going someplace that's very important, you tend to get sick.
Yep. So that was definitely a bit of a bummer. I did get to meet Anna Bernarski, which was fun. Yes.
Awesome games done sick.
Awesome games done sick.
Yeah.
Awesome James done sick.
Yeah. Awesome James was sick. I'm glad you and Anna could meet up.
Yep. So that was cool. We went to a meadery in downtown, not downtown, actually, sort of just general Pittsburgh area. So that was fun. And that was just as I was, like, beginning to feel a little unwell. So, I wore a mask and everything because I was like, this could be, something unpleasant, and I'm very glad that I did. But it was cool to meet her and Cam in person. So that was neat.
Nice. So I do have a question. What would you say is the longest speed run that they had at the event?
That was probably their run of, well, actually the longest, gosh, the final one ran for a long time because it was someone playing Pokemon Emerald, but it was a category called Choose My Main, which is you can donate money to charity to specify what Pokemon you want the runner to choose as their sole Pokemon to play with, which changes after every gym battle. So you pick the starter, and then after every gym battle, his main changes. He has, like, basically modified items in which will bump his Pokemon up to the level of the next gym leader's highest level team member, just to avoid having to grind or anything like that, because otherwise the run would have taken, like, a day.
Yeah.
I forget how long that actually ran for. I want to say it ran for about 4.5 hours.
Oh, okay, yeah, that's pretty good.
It was expected to run for, I think, 3.5, I want to say. I can't remember exactly what the estimate was, but eventually when it became clear that it was running over estimate, they normally show the estimate in part of the stream overlay, and then I think it was around the time the person's main was changed to Shuckle. Someone in the tech crew just changed the estimate to Shuckle. And I think that might have persisted till the end of the run.
That's rough.
So that was very funny. Like some of the tech team members do have a bit of fun with the with the event too, which I always appreciate. But yeah, that went really, really long. Aside from that, I think someone was playing Final Fantasy X with a cutscene removal mod, because I found out that I think they added in the HD remake the ability to skip the cutscenes, but the original PS2 version, you cannot skip cutscenes.
Yeah.
Which is like, I mean, again, it's an earlier RPG, but even so, that's kind of baffling. Apparently, it saves... Actually, you know what? I don't remember off the top of my head how much time it saves, but if I had to guess, I would say it probably saves an hour.
Yeah.
Just skipping all the cutscenes. And that run, I think, lasted about 3 hours.
I remember there was a mini controversy that I watched a video about, where it was people arguing whether to start Super Mario Sunshine after the tutorial cutscene, because there is this tiny segment where you basically just walk over to Flood, the water jetpack, and that's basically all you do. But it is gameplay, and then you have to sit through a ton of, or maybe
like
maybe it's not,
minutes.
Maybe it's
like
maybe it's
three
more
minutes
than
of
that.
Cutscenes.
I think you have to do a bit more than that, but it's a very short segment, and then you 3 minutes or so of cutscenes, and then you can play the rest of the video game. And they were arguing like, look, I understand the spirit of it, but this is miserable to have to sit through this cutscene every single time we restart.
Which is like, see, that's fair for like practicing, I think. If I remember correctly, at this event, they played through that opening section. So they like landed on the runway. They did all that
event,
thing.
That makes sense. It just reminded me of that. It also reminded me of, there are some pretty long speedruns. I remember it's probably a lot shorter now, but early on there were, a handful of people doing 100% Breath of the Wild speedruns that took, I don't know, 12 to 16 hours. And then, ironically, tool-assisted speedruns are actually often quite very long, because since they're tool-assisted, you can put in all these bits and bobs of restrictions on them and then just have them set up and go, and you don't have to sit there and watch, right? So you can do things like wait a week for a clock pendulum to swing back and forth and be slightly off each time it swings back and forth in the floating point arithmetic. And so in a week,
like,
it's
like
different,
the...
and then you can get from one place to another without pressing the A button.
Yeah, those Mario 64... I just remembered another run that I completely neglected to talk about. They had a blindfolded speed run of Majora's Mask. Which was incredible to watch. Although, like, at the very end, when he's fighting the last phase of the final boss, he asks for quiet, and then the audience, like, started clapping with each hit he did on the boss, which I'm like... Now, his headphones are actually noise-canceling, so, like, because the whole point is that he's doing this blindfolded, so he doesn't want the audience, like, reaction to what's going on in the game to affect how he plays. So I don't think it mattered, because he didn't seem to react to it at all, but that kind of, like, bugged me a little bit. And I think there's some of the YouTube comments are like, what are you doing, audience? Although I think really people just kind of got caught up in the hype, because that was a really intense run in terms of execution.
Yeah, I think anyone going there is going to, like, you tell it just to reduce it, but you're not going to get rid of it.
Yeah, there is an energy.
It is so
there.
Hard to get people to not clap at a place that culturally, generally, is associated with clapping. It is so difficult. Yeah. I've been in a few situations where this has been a thing, And yeah. there's nothing you can do. There's always going to be someone who's like, well, there's silence, and they had a louder volume at the end of that sentence. The worst, though, is the person who wants their who pauses for clapping after every single sentence that they say in a speech. Yeah. That's miserable, because then you have to do it. It's not that I didn't like what you said, but we've clapped for the past five things you said. Like, let's go. Let's keep moving.
The Mario Sunshine run after every shine in time with the little beat of the Shine Get music. Everyone in the audience clapped once. So basically every shine, it's like da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, clap. And every single shine through the whole run, which, like, that's fun. That was actually, like, the commentators were like, because that was a thing that they had done a couple years back at the previous Sunshine run that everyone just kind of collectively brought back. And they were like, all right, I'm glad we're doing this again. Also, Joe, real quick. The longest GDQ run that I can find is a run of Chrono Trigger 100% glitchless, which is 5 hours, 41 minutes, and 25 seconds from SGDQ 2019.
Okay, interesting.
I have seen longer speed runs from other events, namely if you look up RPG Limit Break, who, as you can imagine, focus mainly on RPGs. And obviously, speedrunning RPGs, those tend to be longer games to begin with. So I've seen, I think someone did a speedrun of Persona 4 that took multiple, like, 6 or 7 hour segments. It had to be broken up because the runner needed to, like, take a break, I think.
No, I guess it's funny. I was just thinking about other RPGs that I've looked up speedruns to, like the Seventh Saga. Actually, I'm looking right now at the Seventh Saga at RPG Limit Break 2024, which was only 4 hours and 7 minutes.
Yeah, I think I might have watched that run. I can't remember at this point because my memory is
I think we might have talked about it, actually. Like,
I think we might have, yes, because that was my first exposure, because I'd heard you talk about Seventh Saga previously on the podcast, but I didn't know anything about it. And so that was my exposure to it. And I was like, oh, this seems like kind of a neat game. It's interesting.
Yeah. I just, I guess I do wonder, because I know that, like, the tool-assisted speedrun just has, like, an hour of them leveling up and just, like, abusing, you know, how the random numbers are generated. But I might take a peek at it.
Yeah, so just all in all, amazing. This is why I love speedrunning and all that other stuff. I just think it's I'm not, like, the hugest fan of it, but, like, I would say that I am more than casually interested in it. And
I mean, you did go to the thing, James.
I did go to the thing in person.
And you did fly there and pay money, and you, I think...
Lots and lots of
money. You have earned, I will deposit some credibility in your credibility, speedrunning credibility picky bank for you. Right? Ka-tink, ka-tink.
Yep.
Folks, I regret to inform you that we did not do the Games Done Quick segment very quickly.
Yeah. James, are you visible in any of the VODs?
I am, as a matter of fact. And they also took a bunch of, like, press photos and stuff. And I, myself and one of the volunteers who I met while I was there are just one, like, they just took a photo of the two of us just watching the event. It's literally just like a shot of just us two, pretty much sitting in our chairs watching the event, and it's actually a really nice photo.
That's fun.
So yeah, I'm in a decent number of, like, the photos, and I think I'm in, you can barely make me out in a couple of the VODs.
That's fun. Yay.
Yep, pretty neat.
Okay, now I'm done.
Well, not quick though. But Blue, you did also have something that you wanted to talk about this podcast that we're segueing to, because we have to do it quick so that James can say his thing, so that James can be done quick, because James is the one that has a time limit this podcast.
Okay, I will try to.
You don't have to be, like, crazy quick. I'm continuing the bit more than anything.
Yeah. So. I have updated opinions about Clair Obscur. I guess I'll start with, like, a little example that is sort of a microcosm of the experience of the game. So early on in the game, you get your second party you get a second character, and you can walk around, and the game is like, you can switch between these two characters as you walk around. It doesn't change the gameplay. It just like switches which character model you're controlling, basically. And then there is an NPC that you can talk to, and I don't know how many people will have had this experience. I'm going to guess roughly just over 50%. I switched to the new character, which is a nice lady name. I forget her name. But she has a conversation with her friend, if you talk to the NPC, and they talk about the man that you are with, the first character you were playing as, and they sort of talk like he's not there, and then, or after you do that, it sort of gives off the impression that maybe if you switch to the other character and talk to the lady, she'll have something new to say, because they did just talk about him, and they're like, these two characters have a history together, and the man and the NPC have a different history together, so it's sort of like implied that maybe you can do it. But then I switch, and then I talk to her again, and it's the same conversation with the person I'm no longer playing as. And I'm like, oh, okay. So when you said it doesn't affect gameplay at all, you really meant it. And then, like, 20 hours later, you have a whole bunch of characters that you can switch between, and if you talk, you'll meet an NPC, and there's not only one, there's a few, that the person you are talking to them with is suddenly important, and they don't warn you about that, really. So it's just, the game fights itself, and it's really annoying.
That reminds me of Golden Sun. Just to say that this is a thing that RPGs do sometimes. In Golden Sun, there's an ability that one of the characters that you get really early in the game has. It's like a telepathy or something. And so they can read the character's minds. And it's used, when it's introduced, it's used for a puzzle once you get it, right? It's, oh, now that you have this person in your party, you can solve this puzzle and figure out, like, oh, which of these people is actually secretly the bad guy. But then you can keep doing it to everybody. And it's a similar thing where for like the next couple of towns, it's just you talk to a person, they say something, and you read their mind, and they just rephrase the thing that they said, but like they're talking to themselves instead of talking to you. And so you get to a point where you're like, okay, I'm going to stop doing this because clearly it doesn't do anything. And then I don't remember where, but it does end up coming up again that you need to do it. And it's just like, you can't have it be everything. If it's only, you can't have this thing work on everything if it's only useful in some cases, because then that means that the optimal way to play is to, it feels like from your perspective right now, it's like I've got six characters. Now I have to talk to every single NPC with all six characters just in case I'd miss something if I don't do it, even if it doesn't happen all the time. Is this a relatable thing? Are we talking about a similar dynamic?
Sort of. That was just to illustrate, like, that sort of conflict with the game's own design is sort of baked into every level of its construction. Mm. So before, when I talked about this game, I sort of played it wrong. And I was taking that into account and giving the game leeway. But I have since putting it down, I have seen other people play, more normal gamers that don't do the weird play style stuff that I do. And then they had the problems that I did, so I was like, oh, this was not as... So the problems I had weren't fully my fault then. Or, 'cause there's a point relatively early in the game. It's in the first act where I came upon like a secret arena, and you can grind levels there really easily. Like, there's an enemy there that you can fight over and over, and he'll give you more experience than you, like, 100 times more than you see from any other enemy up until that point. Now, I've played a lot of RPGs, and I've been exploring a lot, and there's challenges, like, just off the main path that the game, since it's, like, skill-based, and you can theoretically do the entire game without, like, taking damage if your timing is perfect and beat any enemy.
Mm-hmm.
More or less. I think there's a few exceptions, but the first one that you run into is, like, really achievable. Like, it's by far stronger than anything else you've fought, but it's the beginning of the game, and you can learn it, and it will take 10 minutes, and you will beat it. And so I was like, okay, well, I want to be a little prepared for those coming up, and I also want to go through the story a bit quicker for a little bit, because I have been exploring so much. And so I was at level 15, and then I did that one fight over and over until my characters were level 30. I doubled my level, because I was like, it'll get harder later, and I'll be back on the same track, because I'm just front-loading on grinding a bit. And then the rest of the story mode, like, I kept going and doing the main story and everything I found on the side until about the end of chapter 2, by which point all the story stuff was, like, trivial. And I was like, okay, well, I guess I made a mistake by doing that one fight over and over, but that's my fault. And so I finished the game, and before I finished the game, I was like, I might 100% this. And then when I got the ending, I was like, actually, I don't ever want to pick this game up again. And that's in a good way. The ending is one of the best parts about the game. It was very effective, and I was like, yeah, I am done.
Okay, I was very worried for a second there.
No, but the problem is that now that I have seen other people having the exact same issue where they do, like, less of the side content and all, like, don't grind specifically, and then they also trivialize the entire story, like, all the really big fights in the game, basically, were way too easy, and it was not satisfying. And there is, like, in the pause menu, you can, like, increase the difficulty of, well, you can increase the how much, like, health multiplier and the enemies have before each fight, but I feel like that shouldn't be my job to constantly be going in and changing if you're just going through the game normally. Like, for me, because I played it wrong, sure, that's on me, but when a normal person is having the issue, it should not be on them to constantly be going in and messing with that setting. That just, you just designed your game poorly. That is what I think. And also, the game is, so when you get to Act 3 and by then you're like, oh, okay, everything in the story is really easy. And so I guess now that I've started Act 3, I guess I will finish the main story, because you, like, have your one cutscene at camp where it doesn't, like, let you talk to your companions or anything. It's just like, we have to go do this thing, and then you leave camp, and then you're like, I guess I'll go do this thing before I trivialize the final boss any further. And then I don't know what happened during development, but it's like they had an idea for Act 3, and then they like laid it all out normally, and then they just like cut out a bunch of the main story beats, like super plot crucial chunks, and then just like took them off the critical path and made them side content that I never experienced, because I was like, the game's already easy and it's not showing me anything that's like particularly important seeming, so I guess I will just go beat the game. And then the ending of the game makes you not want to play the game anymore, even though you should have done the other stuff first. But if you do that stuff first, it is way higher level, so it will make the ending of the story worse. It will make it less satisfying to play through. But if you don't do it, it's like, it would be less satisfying narrative-wise. And then, also, there's... It's just, like, every step of the way. I think the problem is that there were a lot of people who worked on it that had a vision, and then also there were a few people that were ex-Ubisoft employees that had Ubisoft vision and had to be like, okay, well, players will just play the main path, and so we can't make it challenging, even though it's, JRPG or FRPG, however you want to define it. It is stylized like JRPGs of the past, where typically the story gets harder and the side content is side content that you can do to help you prepare for the story if you like. But instead, they basically expect you to do the entire story one shot and then come back after and do the rest of it, except that narratively that doesn't work at all. They are trying to get you to do the opposite. And so it's just like two completely different games with different design philosophies, and something happened while they were developing at least the third act, because there are like hints where like chunks are not where they're supposed to be. Like, you go through like a little recap section where you go through a bunch of every story important place. And then there shows up a place that's not important to the story, and it's the only one. And so it's like, okay, so late in development, they changed it so that this was, no story happens here. And so you can, like, see these little cracks. And it's just so frustrating. So, yeah, it is... I was being a lot more generous to it than I should have been, because I didn't know that I didn't do that to myself.
So, has the number ticked down again?
Yeah, I'd probably say at least, like... Like, because the problem is that, like, my rating was based on my satisfaction, and I was satisfied because I didn't know how much I was missing and how frustrating the design is. And so, I don't know.
It was an 8
when I did it, but if I knew then what I know now, I'd give it, like, I don't know, 7, probably. Probably a 7.
It is interesting to think about, like, I would have liked this video game. You don't get that with a movie, necessarily, right? Like, it would be hard. Like, you might, you know, oh, this person, this actor in the movie was actually a jerk while filming this movie, and that colors, like, it colors how you see some of the scenes that they perform, maybe something like that. But, like, when you watch a movie, you get all the content, right? If you miss content, it's because you weren't paying attention.
Yeah.
But in a video game, you can, right, there's the enjoyment that you got, and it's like, do you lower the score just because there was this, not just this, but the particular thing I'm talking about right now, which is that if you realize that if the game had been designed better, you would have had a better experience that of content that was already there, right? It's not just, oh, if they added this extra cool thing, then I would have given it a higher number. It's that the thing was in the game, and the way the game was designed made me miss something that I would have enjoyed that's already in the game.
And then also designed it so that if I had enjoyed it, that it would have been both better and worse, because then if I had gotten that, I'd have been even stronger and the last fight would have been less satisfying.
Right.
I mean, but if I went back after, then that would have defeated the narrative satisfaction of the way that the plot handles.
You can't have ludonarrative distance.
And it's just
or distance. Mm-hmm. Both would
be bad. It's not just that it was like one or the other, but it's one or the other and the other. It just ate itself doubly.
It's interesting because it's not, none of these are unique problems, right? I think Breath of the Wild has a sort of similar vibe with the final boss being kind of trivialized if you play the whole video game. And the point is sort of, though there, I think the replayability helps, where the point, you kind of get a sense that, oh, this is set up in part so that I could replay this game and not do all of the stuff and complete the game that way and have a different experience with the final boss.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, also, difficulty is probably one of the, perhaps ironically or coincidentally, most difficult parts of making a video game. Anyone who's played Mario Maker knows this. Super Mario Maker is a crash course in, people do not know how difficult a thing they've made is in both directions, right? Like you said, like the classic way is, hey, you have not experienced this video game at all. Here are three words. Pick which word you think will make you enjoy the game the most, right? Is it easy? Is it normal? Is it difficult? Which one is the button to click? But then, like you said, like, I think we moved towards, oh, let's give the player knobs, let's give them control over as many things as possible. But then it becomes, you're still trying to anticipate the next thing. There's a bit of a feedback loop where if you feel like you have an understanding of how the game works, you can tune it to that. But if you're constantly having to adjust back and forth,
because the
basically the same
hard
thing
side content, a lot of it was just like 5 feet away from the story content, so it just
right.
And even
so
even like someone I watched play through the ending, they like even did increase the like final boss's health by several times over, and it still didn't do any damage to them because they were way over leveled. So that artificial difficulty is just like a band-aid and did not work at all.
Yeah. I mean, I feel there are games that have done this really well. The one that sticks out to me the most, the system is used in a few games, but I liked it the best in Kid Icarus Uprising, right? That is, I'm not saying that is the way to do it, but I think to solve this problem, to really solve it, other than just trying to create something where you create one difficulty and you try to find a happy medium for the kinds of people who play your video game, right? There's other common strategies, but the idea of you are setting the difficulty and you're trying to challenge yourself so that you will get more reward, and if you, the punishment for failing the challenge, right, for making things too hard isn't necessarily a bad time, it's just that you're going to reduce the difficulty, and so you're not going to reap the rewards of giving yourself the higher difficulty if you fail to complete it, right? And so you are pushing against, it is sort of a self-balancing thing where it evens itself out. And I think that if you really want the difficulty to feel perfect, you need to have systems in your game that automatically balance in some ways, right? Things like I use this example a lot because, hey, Mega Man. But the Mega Man struggled with this with E-Tanks and extra lives, right? Because the better you were at the video game, the more E-tanks you collected. But also the better you are at the video game, the fewer E-tanks you need. So that, right, it gets easier for people who are good at the game, and it gets harder for people who are bad at the game. But when the screws and the currency system were introduced, now that's a better system, because if you're dying and replaying levels and dying and replaying levels, you're going to collect this set of screws that are coming back up and up and over again. And you'll be able to purchase more items. But if you're good at the game and you're just beating the levels, you're not going to collect as many screws. And so you're not going to be able to buy all those items that make the game easier for you as much, right? All this to say that I think just giving manual control is not really the solution that, I don't know, I feel like in the past less than 10 years, but I'm just going to say roughly around that amount of time, this is where a lot of bigger scope games like this have landed, not just RPGs. I think The Last of Us 2 was like this also, where you could really micromanage the difficulty settings for different segments of the game. And it is a solution. But again, it's sort of, to me, it kind of, if I have to manually adjust these things, if I have to think about the difficulty of the video game, if I have to think, oh, I need to increase the number of hits this boss can take and then try to defeat the boss as fast as possible, it just takes me out of it. Yeah. Right? I don't need to be completely unaware that I'm playing a video game, but if I'm thinking about the difficulty setting in the video game beyond, oh, I really don't want to lose right now, which is kind of the most that you think about with Kid Icarus Uprising or a game like that, then I think it doesn't quite serve its thing. I mean, the really tricky balance is the one where you have the game auto-adjust to the player, and that works really well until the player learns that you're doing that, and then they hate it. They love it when they don't know that you're doing that, because then they think they're getting better at the video game. And then the moment they realize that you are doing it, then they're like, oh, I hate this. I think Resident Evil 4 was a game that did that, and that was a reaction I have heard a couple times of bringing up that fact and people being like, oh, wait, that's what it does? Oh, man, I actually now retroactively don't like that difficulty choice.
I wonder, I think it's hard. What do you think about sort of the, I mean, like other games may have done this before, but like the Xenoblade Chronicles way of doing it with the sort of bonus EXP system? Because that is, I don't believe any of the Xenoblade games, at least none that I played, have any kind of dynamic difficulty scaling or anything like that. It is fully manual, but it's a little bit more abstracted in the sense of you don't necessarily, like, you both do and don't have granular control, which is that as you explore, as you do all of the things that would naturally you would be drawn to do in this big exploration-focused RPG, which is exploring and fighting enemies and covering secrets and exploring the map, you will accrue bonus experience, which is that any experience you gain from sources other than fighting enemies directly basically goes into to sort of a floating pool, which at save and like rest points you can choose to consume to increase your individual characters or your whole party's levels. And the pool is separate for each character. So like, you know, if you defeat an enemy, each character now gets, you know, 500, you know, bonus, like basically if one character levels up, it doesn't remove EXP from the pool, so now other characters can't level up, if that makes sense. It's like it's a big floating number of experience that all of your party members can draw from equally. But basically, it encourages a way of playing that I like, which it solves the problem of, I want to do all the side content, but I don't want to become grossly overpowered as a result of the side content. Which is basically, well, now all of this side content doesn't automatically give you any boost in experience, but it goes into this floating pool that if you're at a part of a game that you find to be difficult, you can now say, okay, I could potentially go up you know, I've accrued enough experience to go up 3 levels, but I can choose how many levels of experience I want to get. And I believe once you make the choice, it's locked in, so you can't, like, go down levels until... Mm-hmm. You can in New Game Plus, which I think is interesting, because they basically start you at whatever level you are at, you know, because it's New Game Plus. And then at save stations, they introduce the ability to reduce your experience if you desire. And then I think you can even, like, buy high-tier items by selling your bonus experience in excess, which is neat. But anyway, but during the main point of the game, if you so desire, you can basically only get experience, or you can basically only choose to use the experience you get from directly fighting enemies. And then by the time you encounter resistance, you probably already have a level or 2 or 3 in reserve that you can sort of pull from to make the game easier if you need it to be, which I think is a pretty elegant system.
Yeah, I think that does solve kind of a problem. You can kind of treat it as you're going to put in the effort for the grinding on the side content, but you don't want to worry about accidentally over-leveling from it. So it prevents that problem from happening. I do think for it to be, and I'd have to, part of it would depend, you'd still need to tune it, right? But I think for it to really land, having a sort of push and pull of, you know, why wouldn't you just empty it out, right? If the only reason is, oh, it'll make the video game too easy, I think that can work, but I don't think that's as satisfying, right? I don't like when a game, maybe I'm being a little too strict on this, but I feel like it's better to not have to think, I am going to refrain from doing something to make the video game harder the first time that you're playing it. Right? I think you really shouldn't be thinking about that. If the game is giving you resources and then just telling you not to use them, and there's no like trade-off, right? Like you could say even a trade-off of the extra time, maybe the extra time sink to go through the process can be kind of enough. Right? You have to take a little bit extra time to do this extra level, this extra EXP, but not as much as going out and grinding would be. So, like, maybe that can balance out. Again, it's just, you know, the having a balance, having a cost and a benefit. And so that it feels like you're making a video game decision instead of a difficulty decision.
I see.
But again, it would really come down to how it, just because I haven't experienced it myself, nor have I pulled it from my experience pool. I wouldn't want to, you know, come down. I feel like I'm coming down too critically for a system that I don't particularly understand very well. So,
I mean, the way that you described it is it's not incorrect. It is a matter of, like, you know, when you stop at a rest stop, you just have an option there that's like level up. And then it just says, hey, this character can go up 2 levels. This character can go up 3 levels. And then you can either say, okay, let me pick how many levels I want to go up, or just, hey, press 1 button to max out the level of my entire party as far as I have experience to do so.
I mean, it's kind of funny that in a way, Pokemon has kind of come up with a solution to this, which is that give you the ability to gain experience from fights that you lose.
It does?
Yeah, because
you can do that?
Your opponent has 6, 5, 4 multiple Pokemon. If you defeat one of the Pokemon, you get experience from that Pokemon that you defeated, even if you don't go on to defeat the trainer, right? So you can just go back and instead of going out to grind, which you can do, sometimes that feels more optimal if you're just being completely outclassed, but just going back and refighting the gym leader over and over again, you're both gaining experience with how the fight works, right? You're learning if you're at a time and an age where you can't just go Google what all the movesets are, right? You learn how the things work. So you're going and you're getting the actual experience of like, oh, how does this work? What does Pokemon know? What is the team like? You also gain maybe some experience and some levels each time you fight, so it gets a little bit easier each time you do it. Mm-hmm. And so you're always trying to complete – you're always doing something that will – that has a chance of making you succeed in the goal, as opposed to grinding, where the whole time you're grinding, you're maybe benefiting, but you're not – there's no chance while you're out there in the wild, in the tall grass next to this town, that you're going to advance the game, right? And so that's why it feels like different than kind of quote unquote grinding on the boss fight itself. Now, this works
true.
Because Pokemon is a game about fighting several enemies in sequence. This does not apply to everything, but like that is a way that you can kind of have this push and pull, right? Having a partial victory, aiming for a partial victory, keeping the player engaged at the point of advancement.
And from a broader sense, though, I feel like that could still be applied to other games. Like, you know, for instance, Dragon Warrior 1. When I was playing that, you know, sometimes I would consider, you know, resetting early on in that first playthrough. I considered resetting whenever I died until, you know, Nathaniel and Jetty pointed out, well, you may have lost some money, but you respawn back at the castle with all of your EXP that you gained from that trip. So potentially you've not lost everything, and resetting will take you back. You will lose any progress you made. But as long as you didn't need that gold too badly, the potential experience gains can still be worth taking the death and rolling with it, if that makes sense. And potentially that could be, you rather than, say, fighting the gym leader again, you might be delving into that cave again and seeing if you can make it further now that you've gained 1.5 levels while you were down there on your first journey in. But I would still say, so it is, you're right that it's different from grinding because you're not just sort of wandering. You're doing something with intent. You're doing something with purpose, with the intent of making forward progress. But it is definitely a little bit of, like, I feel like there's a little bit of like gray area in between what, you know, where we draw the line between grinding and, you know, trying to push forward even if you fail.
I mean, you can really get deep in the weeds, because when you get to like the early Dragon Warrior level stuff, you then start thinking, you have to start thinking about the original sort of purpose of the EXP and gold system, which are basically two different experience systems, right? Yeah. You've got the experience that you use to level up and gain abilities on that half. And then the gold is kind of its own set of experience but leveling up is getting a new sword, getting armor. I feel like that is an element of RPGs that is still sort of vestigially there. I feel like in most modern RPGs, money really just doesn't matter. You just always have way more money you always have way more money, or basically just enough money to buy the best equipment whenever it becomes available to you.
In some RPGs, even like money is more of like, is you could argue actually that money is like a sort of like, again, giving a player a difficulty, a control over difficulty, because in a lot of RPGs, at least like maybe mid-generation RPGs, you could often find decent equipment in dungeons and caves, either by exploring around the world or just continuing forward along the path. You could find new equipment and stuff, but oftentimes I think you would find that it tends to be stuff that's either the stuff you just bought or stuff that maybe is not quite as good as the best equipment you could get from the shop. Mm-hmm. But to me, that possibly speaks to the intention of, if you don't want to have to grind for money, you can choose to have a slightly harder time, but the game will still give you equipment to help meet this challenge. But if you're having too difficult of a time, you can use that money that you've accrued to buy better equipment before you would find it or come across it. But then that really is, that's still kind of a crapshoot though, because you, unless you're following a guide or a map or something, you won't know when you're going to happen across the next piece of gear. So that's a bit of a tenuous kind of example, but I don't know. It's making me think, which I like.
Is this a conversation you were expecting to spin off of your topic, Blue?
It's good.
I don't think that's James, the answer to the question.
I think you need to tell us about the games you've been playing in recent times very quickly, because we are getting close to your time that you need to go.
Yes, possibly. So game I played recently was the original Portal. I played that through. Just a nice, short and sweet game. Good puzzles, good writing. I had never played it before, and I'm glad that I finally played it. It was just a really nice short experience. And as someone who lately tends to play a lot of like big RPGs or long games that you put a lot of time into, I have to say I really appreciated a game that was just short. It was just concise and nice to play, and then you're done with it and you're like, yep, that was a good experience. And then on that same note, I played with a friend of mine the Portal 2 co-op mode, which was, again, a blast. And also, there were some real head scratchers there that had us like sitting around, like bumbling around, trying to figure out where we needed to portal, how we needed to arrange things for like, you know, 10, like upwards of 10 minutes, I think, on a couple of those late puzzles, because they have like a set of really super advanced ones, and that was really cool. That was super fun. And the one other thing I've mainly been playing is a new Minecraft mod pack called Stone Block 4, which is a spin on, well, it's the, you know, the fourth or the third sequel to a mod pack called Stone Block, which its sort of big thing was it turned the concept of a skyblock pack on its head, which is you're not suspended in the sky, but rather you're in a world of just endless stone. And it follows basically those kinds of rules of, you know, you need to be, you know, you need to become self-sufficient in this world, given a set of starting items. You need to sort of build yourself a base and learn to, you know, sort of flourish in that world. And I had an interesting conversation topic, but I might save that for a later podcast so that this one doesn't become awesome podcast done long.
Yeah. We are quickly approaching that, ironically. I can go quick. I have been playing the hard campaign of Advance Wars 2. I know I talked about playing Advance Wars 2 on the podcast earlier. And then I beat the campaign, and it's like, do you want to play the hard campaign? It's like, I just did this. I don't want to do it again immediately. But now enough time has passed where it's, I remember, you know, probably most of the battles, but not enough where it feels like I'm just doing the same thing over and over again. I'm probably a little over halfway. I'm near the end of Yellow Comet. I will probably talk about it more when I finish it, though. But it has been a good time. It is, I think, a good video game.
Nice.
Jetty, what games have you been playing in recent times?
I haven't. I guess I've been playing the development game.
When will door be lock?
Space door lock.
Yeah, space door lock with an E.
But yeah, that's a good one for anyone other than you.
Yeah, Jetty showed me a picture, and there was text that said the door is lock with an E. And he told me that one day I will get to open the door that is locked, but he won't let me yet.
Well, so the problem is, this has basically been my entire game development history, which is that I get to like the 60% mark of like developing a game, and I'm suddenly like, man, I want to make a different game. So I had actually like since December, so like for at least a month now, right? Like a month, month and a half, I've been like actively working basically every day on making a game for the NES, which I've been programming in assembly. And it's been going very well. I've actually been like very successful getting all of the things done that I want to have done. And I am switching very suddenly. I'm like, man, you know, I'm not feeling this sort of sci-fi theme that I've been going with. I think I want to make a fantasy game, and so I've kind of taken a bit of a break for like the last week or two.
We need to, I want to talk with you like after the podcast or like, you know, at a later time. I want to talk with you more about that because I find that fascinating.
It is very fun. And honestly, I do it less for the purpose of like specifically completing a game and more just because the development game is fun to me. Right?
Oh, yeah.
So. Yes, we can talk about it later. Or maybe we'll have a special podcast just to talk about...
I would be so down for that.
But what is it that Paul says? The podcast about playing games and making games?
And making games.
Yeah. So.
Blue, what games have you been playing in recent times?
I have started Absalom, which is
beat 'em up with... like the name of a video game that you would play.
It's a beat 'em up, which, as we learned last month, I'm not a big fan of.
But it had the name, so.
I guess. It's got roguelike elements, and that is the secret that has been missing to beat 'em ups forever. I know it's a big. I know we joke about how games these days are just thing, but like. That is what it needed. That's my hot take. Sorry.
Yeah, that's, I mean...
Beat 'em ups have always been bad, and now they're good. I also have played a bit of Raven's Watch, which is just a regular roguelike game, I guess. I don't know. You play as, like, Red Riding Hood and Geppetto and, like... characters
sounds
like
normal,
that.
Yeah,
I don't. It's the gameplay is it's like less polished. Like it's a decent little indie game. It's fine. There's nothing like too special about it. I'd say except it is like multiplayer. I think it's like up to 4-player co-op roguelike game. Oh. So that could be fun, but I don't have friends. So I have also been just got back into 100 Line Defense Academy. I think I'm about a third of the way through my first playthrough.
Ooh.
So a lot has happened, but I'm also looking forward to Routine. Routine just came out, and I've been waiting for that since, like, 13 years ago, I think.
Wow.
Yeah, that finally came out, and I want to play that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we didn't talk about this, but recently there was also, in terms of games we want to be playing, I know with a lot of the Game Cola circle, the new Tomodachi Life had a big direct that talked all about it, and I think people are going to be quite excited for that. I'm ready for the Cola Dachi Life sequel, guys.
Oh, man.
I think I will leave a link in the... in the description somewhere of the Cola Dachi Life musical, which is still one of my favorite things that exists.
If somebody starts a Game Cola Tomodachi like playthrough in this new game, I want to see that. I want to follow that up.
It is. So I'm excited. I don't know if I'll play it because it's not quite my vibe of games that I tend to play, but I do really enjoy the experience of people that I know playing a Tomodachi Life game. It is quite enjoyable because you get the curation. You get the curation of the bits that are the best, right? The funniest things. We're like, oh, I got to show people this. Mm-hmm. So that, I don't know, to me that might be a bit more of the ideal experience. But I'm happy either way. So I think it's a good balance. It's a good game to have something like that.
Is it Switch 2 exclusive?
It is. I think it is primarily a Switch 1 game, the way that they talk about it. I almost wonder if it was originally supposed to be just a Switch 1 game, and then it got delayed in a way where it was coming out with at the same time as the Switch 2. Because and watch the video, they really say like it is coming out on Switch. Oh, and by the way, it'll also work on Switch 2.
Okay.
So I think hopefully it'll be well optimized for the Switch One, for the folks who want. I know a couple people who still only have a Switch One who are
like me,
really want to be able to play it and for it to be good. Yeah,
maybe I'll give it a try. I've never tried playing a Tomodachi Life game. They seem kind of wacky, zany. I don't know if it's the kind of game I would normally play, but I might give it a shot just for the heck of it.
Well, we look forward to hearing that, James. I am in my end of the podcast voice. Can you tell? thank you for listening to this episode of the Game Cola podcast. If you like what you heard, be sure to check us out on our actual internet website, GameCola.net, and our YouTube channel, GC.net, the letter G, the letter C, the word dot, and the word net for things. I uploaded recently a clip that is a compilation of all of the times Jetty talked about Little Dragon's Cafe. And that was a fun thing to make and have exist. It's fun to see it all stitched together. So you can go listen to that. And then there's also a bunch of other playthroughs. Oh, and also, if you have any clip suggestions, I want to start making these more again. So if you have any suggestions for bits, ideally if you know the episode, and ideally if you know the time code, but even if you're like, I remember a time where someone said this and it was funny, go find it. I might still try that. I mean, who knows? I might remember or know what keywords to look for. So, you know, if you're not driving, leave a little comment somewhere where we can see it on the Discord, perhaps, or in the YouTube channel comments. You can find Discord on the website and in the YouTube video description, or you can email us at podcast@gamecola.net, and Jetty will tell me what you wrote in the email, I assume. You can follow some of us on Blue Sky. I'm Joseph.Martin on Blue Sky. I don't know if anybody else here. I know James has a Blue Sky, but James does not use Blue Sky very much.
No, I don't really touch traditional social media like at all. I basically just have an account just so that I can occasionally look at posts from other people, and that's about it.
I think that is a good point to end this podcast. Thank you for listening. Have a wonderful time of day, wherever it is, whenever it is you are listening to this podcast, and we will see you next month. Goodbye, everybody.
Goodbye.
Okay.
Yay.
Let's sync. In 3, 2, 1, sink.
Sink. But yeah, I think that part of that, Joe, comes from just being a podcast host, admittedly.
Mm-hmm. Were you saying something?
Oh, I was just going to say is that you paused like an extra like half beat before saying
sink.
Yeah,
I noticed
sink.
That.
You can't do a countdown and go 3, 2, 1, sink.
I wonder if that was an audio delay
because I do not recall doing this, but
okay,
I will listen back to my own audio, and maybe this will be a coda. This will be a difficult piece to edit.
Yeah.
Anyway.